Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Well, what do you think when you think of Sabbath? Is it a day of rest? Is it a time focusing on God? Or is it a day to kind of sleep in, lay on the couch, and catch the big game? Well, what if Sabbath was something more? Maybe a time to pursue joy and delight in the Lord. Would you plan differently for that day? Well, today I'm thrilled to get to talk with Dr. Dan Allender, author of Sabbath. And he's going to tackle some of those myths about Sabbath rest and help us understand how the ancient tradition of Sabbath may be a little bit different than what you may think today. Let me tell you a little bit about him, and then we'll get him right on the show. Dr. Dan Allender serves as founding president and professor of counseling in the Seattle School of Theology and Psychology in Seattle, Washington. He also has his MDiv from Westminster Theological Seminary and his PhD in counseling psychology from Michigan State University. He has taught in the Biblical Counseling Department at Grace Theological Seminary, and also worked as a professor in the Master of Arts in Biblical Counseling program at Colorado Christian University. Dan and his wife Becky live in the Puget Sound area of Washington State, and they have three adult children and three grandchildren. Well, Dan, welcome to the show.
Joe, thank you so much, and not that it's something that you should know, but we have a fourth grandchild coming on the way, so we are a happy little clan.
Well, that is excellent, and they are fun, aren't they? My parents tell me that they're even more fun than we were.
Well, honestly, I love my grandchildren, but I think if there's anything I love about being a grandfather, it's I get to watch my children parent, and that is one of the sweetest gifts I think you get in life.
Oh, that is very nice to say. I'll remind my parents of that as well. That it's I don't know. Sometimes it's fun to make fun of me, but mostly I hope it's fun to just watch me parent. So,
yes, indeed, it is. And if they think otherwise, let's just say they need to think about Sabbath.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about Sabbath. You know, as we grow up and we learn about what it means to have that Sabbath day of rest, it seems that people have the idea that maybe we should just be laying around and kind of hanging out and doing no work, and that the point of it is a physical rest. But throughout your book, you say that that's not really the case. Kind of set it up for us.
Well, let's just start with two obvious sentences. First, the Sabbath is part of the Ten Commandments. It did not get abrogated. It didn't get rejected, shall we say, because Jesus came and fulfilled the law. The Ten Commandments are a way of looking at life and knowing how God wants us to live. So it's the fourth commandment. It's not an option. It's not like you say, oh, I'm not into Sabbath. Well, really, you're not into the fourth commandment. That's kind of a problem. So once we acknowledge that Sabbath is part of God's plan, not just for the Old Testament people of God, not just for Jews, but for the earth he desires for us to Sabbath, then the second issue is God takes the day to, and I'll put it in quotation marks, rest. Well, I honestly don't think the omnipotent God of the universe needs rest. It's not that he wearied himself
and needed to
lie down and take a break for a full 24 hours. You know, that the notion of rest has to be guided by our understanding of what God does. And what he does at the end of every day of creation is he stands back and he delights. He literally says the phrase, and it is good. And the word good, it's not good bad. It's really the word that we would use, the word beautiful. He's standing back and saying, the creation I have brought forth is stunning. It's beautiful. So that, I think, gives us a far keener understanding of what's at the core of Sabbath more than the notion of take a break, don't do work. He's really inviting us, if I can put it in pretty simple language, to play, to delight in play, to be curious about the world he has created, and to be captured by his delight in us and our delight in him and his creation. If we can get that one simple core beginning point, a lot of the questions and confusion about Sabbath, I think, actually melts away.
I kind of liken it to when, say, at the beginning of the summer, you know, here in the Midwest, we have these terrible winters, and then you kind of start uncovering things in your yard, and all of a sudden you're planting your annuals, and you're raking up leaves, and you're getting everything ready, and you're tired from your work, but then you can sit on your deck, and then you just grab a Coke and rest and enjoy what it is that you've finally been able to accomplish through a lot of hard work. Is that similar to kind of what we can look to as we get to the end of the week or whatever day we're choosing for time to rest, enjoy, delight in who God is, what's already been accomplished, and then just kind of rest in that?
Oh, Joe, I think it's brilliant what you've said. Now, I'm from Seattle, so we are known across the country as weather wimps. You know, our span of diversity of temperature is somewhere between like 40, 45 in the winter and 75 in the summer. It can get colder, can get hotter, but that's the normal range. It's about 30 degrees. My guess is your range is somewhere between 20, 30 below and 100, 104 or 5.
Is yes, that is true.
So, I mean, your variance is 140-some degrees. Ours is 30. You understand why I say, you know, I'm a weather wimp. But so the idea of coming out of a cruel winter, at least from my standpoint, and entering into the life of spring, the fact that 70% of the Earth's growth occurs in about 11, 12-week period of time, you know, if that doesn't capture you, if that doesn't hold your attention, and the key phrase from my standpoint is the idea of resting on your porch and enjoying. The key word there to me is enjoying. We are meant to be captured by the glory of God, the beauty of God, and in that being caught, captured, it's revealed, it's uncovered, and in the uncovering, we see more of his glory than we would have noticed if we had just sort of passed it by with a slight look. You've got to, in one sense, study on the Sabbath, but this isn't preparation for an exam. It's no pressure. It's no right or wrong failure. It's a matter of will you attend, literally give your eyes, your heart over to attending to the beauty of what he's created, and then letting your heart delight, letting your heart enjoy.
You know, I loved what you wrote about how the commandment, the Sabbath commandment, is number 4, and how those kind of divided the commandments, and the first 3 being all about who God was, who God is, and then the rest, this being kind of a transition. Can you talk more about that?
Well, if you think in terms of the 10 commandments really are a gift to us, they're not a strike against you for failing, because Jesus has fulfilled the law. He's the only one who can keep the 10 commandments is God himself, Jesus. And so as he fulfills the law for us, the law then is meant not merely to guide, though it is a great guidance. It's meant to restore, to actually restore us into relationship with him and relationship with mankind, humankind. So there you've got the great commandment. Jesus saying, you know, the commandments boil down to this: love the Lord your God with your whole heart, soul, strength, and mind, and your neighbor as yourself. So in one sense, 1 through 3 are about loving God. 5 through 10 are about loving your neighbor. But that transition is your ability to bring God into relationships will be through the 4th commandment. In one sense, it's the bridge between 1 and 3, 1 through 3, and 5 through 10. And the core of that is he wants you to rest. That is, to take in, attend to, and delight in his glory, because otherwise you will not have the ability to keep from thieving, keep from deceiving, keep from being false witness, keep from murder, keep from adultery, keep from lust. So that it, you're not going to fulfill the commandments without Sabbath.
You know, why does delight seem to be so elusive for us? Why is it so difficult? I mean, back to that analogy of sitting on the deck. Sometimes I'll sit on my deck and say, oh, I should have weeded that garden, or I wish I would have planted those flowers differently, or whatever. And do we tend to do that as well? Why can't we just delight in who God is and what he has done in our lives?
Oh, Joe, right there, to me, you've asked such an important question that leaves me, we can respond, we think about it together, but the bottom line is why? You know, you hear Paul in Romans chapter 2 say, why do you treat the kindness of God with contempt? Why are we so afraid of kindness? Why are we so afraid of delight? And in many ways, let's just use this quick contrast, the theological construct that we are already saved. We are already saved. And yet, we're not yet saved. We're not yet fully redeemed in the way that God intends for us to be when we see him as he is. So in one sense, there's a paradox here. I'm a saved man. I'm not a saved man. Both are true. But if we start with the already, we know something of the delight of God, or we would not have come to relationship with him. We would not be living in relationship. But there are so many things against us trusting his love. Pressure, performance, history of our own families and their way of relating to us. Goodness gracious, how the world has treated each of us. Seldom, honestly, if I ask you to kind of do a survey of how much delight have you known in this lifetime, most people will say, maybe my grandmother, maybe a girl I dated, and sometimes with my spouse. But, you know, delight is a rare experience on this earth. And I think in many ways, we've kind of come to the cynical, if not even indifferent stance that it'd be great. It's not likely, but, you know, I'm fine. So we don't really know what we need.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about this challenge that we have to take time being one of them, and then take time to delight in who God is and who he is in our lives. We're going to talk more about that when we come back. We have to take a really quick break, but talking to Dr. Dan Allender today about his book and just about Sabbath. What is it? How do we do it? And how can we incorporate that into our practice of our daily lives? We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Great to have you here this afternoon. I'm thrilled today to be able to talk to Dr. Dan Allender today. He wrote a book on Sabbath, and we're just chatting a little bit about what it means to delight in the Lord, to take that time to take practice Sabbath, what it means to delight in him, to rest in who he is. And, you know, there are some things that might keep us away from doing that. And one of those is time, Dan. A lot of people are so crunched and busy and hurried, and they don't take the time to even enjoy time to delight in the Lord. Do you find that that is a main complaint or a main challenge that people have with the concept of coming to a practice of Sabbath in their life?
I do. And it's, I mean, even the verb, take time. Well, we don't take time. Time is actually a created reality that we are meant to honor and submit to. In the same way that, you know, you can submit to a rock by acknowledging it's too big for you to pick up. So time is one of those realities where if we understand that we can't add a qubit, we can't take away a qubit. We have been given time, and that would be the key verb I would offer. I use the phrase you use all the time. I can't take time for that. Mm-hmm. And my wife, who is really the one, my wife Becky, is the presence of Sabbath, the one who has asked me to consider it, write about it, live it. So the word she'll always use is not the word take time, but the idea that we have been given time. And as a gift, we get to determine with that gift how we want to use it for the sake of the one who gave it to us. So if we see time not as ours to take, but as something we receive that is given, then the question is, do you have enough time? Well, are you kidding? I have all the time in the world to do what God desires. But what keeps us from doing that, I think, boils down to a simple word, idolatry. Mm. We feel pressure, but we also serve idols that demand that we be 24/7, always moving, always committed, always doing this work. So it can be a job, it can be a family, it can be children, that we feel like we have to be on for, and that there really is not time to Sabbath. Well, that's like saying you don't have time to be faithful. You don't have time to engage God. In and of itself, let's just say it's ridiculous.
Well, and it's in the taking time that seems to be when we do be able to let go and find that ability to delight in the Lord. But that step one is making the time to do it, correct?
Well, and again, notice our verbs. I don't mean to be a word Nazi here, but the idea of making time. So have you ever made time?
I wish I could. I would be a wealthy woman with a lot of time to delight.
Yeah, well, you'd be God then. Because there's only one person who's made time. It's God. Just as he made you, he made time. God is not below time. He's not under time. Time is a created reality that God made. So you can't take time. You can't make time. But you can receive time as a gift, in which case I'm back to that same premise of, no, he's literally told you, take a day, receive a day. So once you receive a day to be yours for the sake of Sabbath, and then you choose to let work intrude, it is nothing but a choice. And what most people honestly find out is that we end up working so many more hours. We work hard, but we often work stupid. And as a result, we end up spending a lot more time doing things than we really need to do, that if we really literally captured a day as our play day with God, a day of delight with God. Now there's a whole other series of things to be thought about with regard to that, but if we can push back against the fact that, no, it's the fourth commandment, and you've got all the time in the world to Sabbath, you will literally for eternity Sabbath, and you get preparatory one day a week in preparation for that eternal Sabbath. It's an excuse. Let's just say it bluntly. It's an excuse to justify why we need to keep faithful to our false gods.
Well, and you listed a few items that seem to keep us from observing the Sabbath. And one of them, which I really resonated with, was just basic fear. Fear of not trusting God to care for our lives during the time that we are taking to delight in him.
Yes.
Talk more about that, why we're in that fog, of course, but how that's just that's completely false.
Well, again, I have a mortgage to pay. My children are older, but they've done graduate work, and I said I would be of help as I could be to them financially with regard to their education. You know, I've got bills, mm-hmm. I've got some net worth, but I've got a lot of bills, and there's the fear. If I don't keep working almost endlessly, I will not be able to provide for my family, to sustain the dreams that we have as a family community. Again, It's understandable. It's just an excuse. When I really understand that, no, I will actually be way more effective in the 5 or 6 days I choose to work if I allow my heart to play in this day called Sabbath.
Mm. And it seems like that is a very difficult lesson for us to learn. And both my husband and I have had jobs at various times where we work on the weekend. And so we've had to choose a day or a time, even if it's not a time when we're together, where we can observe Sabbath on our own. But what I find is that now that we're not working on the weekends, it's still very difficult to not be busy.
Yes. And again, one of the things that my premise holds is that it doesn't have to be Sunday. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be Saturday. The practice of Sabbath for my wife and I is that we attempt to create a space, depending on my travel. And I'm on the road teaching 20-some weeks a year. So there are many disrupted Sabbaths. But we need to find time individually, dyadically, corporately, and as a family for this level of, again, rest, which is not chilling out, vegging out, lying on the couch, turning the TV to all 600 channels, and then all of a sudden realizing what I've done is I've entertained myself with distraction. That is not Sabbath. It's not what God designed, nor is it Sunday or whatever day that you practice Sabbath. It's not a day to, in one sense, go play your normal game of golf. There's a sense in which the day of Sabbath is meant to be like no other day, that it captures something about the nature of what eternity will be, that you aren't meant to divert, to distract, to just entertain yourself. There's something far more central to the core of what Sabbath holds than the notion of entertainment.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned, which I love to do, is to just open myself up in the morning and say, well, you may bring someone into my life today who I need to talk to or who needs to talk to me, and to have that openness and willingness to do that throughout the day. And he always surprises me with something. And you say that's part of delighting in the Lord.
Well, it is, because do you see how sweet it is for you to talk about your own sense of curiosity? I mean, you're naming, which is so honoring, that you've got a very open heart, and a heart that's available not only to God, but for passageway of human beings intersecting with your life and seeing what they bring. So I think there's meant to be a kind of community experience of Sabbath. Every Sabbath? No, not necessarily. There are times where I think the best thing you can do for yourself is to plop yourself down in the nearest woods and sit there for 12 hours and watch the world, literally watch the world.
Well, talking to author and professor and counselor, Dr. Dan Allender today. He's written a book on Sabbath. We're talking about what it means to enjoy Sabbath. And we'll be talking about that a little bit more just after the break. We will be right back on Connecting Faith. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. We're talking about Sabbath today. It's just a fascinating subject for me, especially because I feel like we grow up thinking that Sabbath is this time when we're supposed to like lay on the couch, make sure we physically rest and be ready for the week ahead. I've read several books, articles, all kinds of things on what it means to really practice Sabbath. So I'm thrilled to have Dr. Dan Allender here today, who has also studied Sabbath from many different perspectives. He, of course, is has a PhD in counseling psychology. He's been a professor at several different universities and seminaries, and he is the founding president and professor of counseling in the Seattle School of Theology and Psychology, currently in Seattle, Washington. So, Dan, thanks so much for joining us today. You know, some books really do say that Sabbath is the way that God intended for us to kind of recharge our batteries so that we can return to work with even more vigor than we had before we rested. So we've been talking about how that's not really how it worked or how he intended it, but it seems to be what we as Americans especially think. But other cultures don't share that, do they?
They really don't. There are probably four countries that have the level of time commitment where I think that, if I'm remembering my figures correctly, about 70% of Americans don't take their full vacation that they could.
Mm.
I mean, we're a culture that in many ways loves to complain about work, but loves to work, loves to keep on the grind. So it's not hard to understand why we would adapt the concept of Sabbath to our, you know, industrial cultural lifestyle. But as long as we can keep coming back to saying taking a nap is not wrong, but that's not what Sabbath is. And it's fine to watch TV on the Sabbath, but literally the day, 4 or 5 hours, it's not chilling out. Yet I want to underscore something that you brought up, and that is, yes, indeed, when you spend the day as God intended, I think you will find you have immense renewal and restoration and greater energy for what's ahead for the week.
Well, and especially if you're a person, I don't know, maybe some people are a little type A like me, and actually just laying around doing nothing will drive me absolutely batty. Instead, where I find that I'm rejuved and have energy is of course spending time with God, rejuvenating with what he has to say to me, but then talking to other people about it. Where does community and other people play into this idea of what Sabbath means so that we can share the gifts he's given us? And that is indeed a gift for us.
Well, and Sabbath, there are portions of Sabbath that are clearly a context for feasting. So when we think about Sabbath, we need to hear it is a taste of heaven. It's what we're going to have for eternity, and that is Sabbath. So when you think of eternity, I hope one of the metaphors or pictures of it is the wedding feast of the Lamb. It's a day of celebration. So to celebrate alone, eating alone, looking at beauty alone, I want to be heard well. There are days where our life of Sabbath has required my wife and I to go on different paths to be able to capture what we hear Jesus inviting us to enjoy. But the majority of Sabbath is my wife and I and our children and or our neighbors or friends from church or ministry partners from around the world. And it's meant to be good food, good drink, good music, good laughter, good stories. It's not just hanging out with friends. It's purposeful. We are now focused on being captured by beauty, by truth, by goodness. And once you begin to allow that to be the focus of your Sabbath, then we're not just with friends saying, hey, how are you doing? What's new? And then sharing stories. It's Sabbath is meant to have that kind of intentional, we're gathered to receive and be part of one another's beauty and glory and the glory of God. So it allows you to focus time. Look, if you're coming over for a Sabbath meal with us, you better know it's not just sitting around having nice idle chat. We're going to pray, we're going to talk, we're going to sing, and sometimes there's art projects. There's just, I mean, it's like over a lifetime, the kinds of things you get to do with Sabbath, it creates that hunger for that day to come, and it gives you some level of grief when that day has passed and yet greater anticipation for it to come again.
Mm. Well, and you had written something about that when God gives you a gift, that he doesn't want you to hoard it. You use the analogy of the manna and people hoarding manna and how it would spoil. Do you think that that's the same way we should look at how God's gifted us and how we need to share those gifts with other people as well?
Oh, totally so. My wife is the only person in our family that has what I'll call a musical bent. My son plays guitar in a band, so I wouldn't say it's entirely my wife. But we don't sing well. I mean, we are just sort of burdened to be a family that makes a more cacophonous noise rather than joyful. But we've got friends who are brilliant musicians. So some of my favorite Sabbaths are times where we've gone to their homes or joined with them, and where there's a mandolin, where there's a bass, where there are drums, where there's just a chance to, in one sense, be part of the creativity of music. You know, I can actually whack a tambourine. I actually play a jew's harp. There are a few things I can do musically, really, that really aren't, but are. But you see, you can participate. You can create with others something of beauty, and that's why you gather, not just to be with other people, not just to have a good time with other people. You can do that any day of the week, but that notion of we are here for delight, for beauty, for goodness, for truth, uniquely a taste of what heaven will one day be, I think it changes how you actually spend that day.
Is there preparation work that we can do mentally, physically, spiritually to kind of get us set up for taking that time? See, I said it again. I need to stop saying taking that time. For observing Sabbath?
Yeah, well, and again, I'm fine with using taking time as long as you gave me that opportunity to go, yeah, use the word take, use the word make, but always smile internally when you go, you know, I don't take time. I don't make time, but I can receive it as a gift. Number one, I think you have to admit, you have to confess, it's the fourth commandment. Mm. And we're all lawbreakers. I mean, we wouldn't need the gospel through our whole lives if we kept the law perfectly. So I'm a Sabbath breaker. I've broken the Sabbath probably more than any because I actually believe the Sabbath to be good. But in knowing that you break the Sabbath, at least know that's what God's design is. Second, you've got to wrestle with that brilliant question you brought up in our last half hour, and that is, why are we so afraid of delight? Why are we so afraid of offering it to others or receiving it from others? And it's meant to be a give and take, an offering of delight to one another. So if you will address, it's God's rule. Second, we've got our own internal reasons, our own personal stories for why delight feels terrifying. And then third, if we can just play with, and literally, don't make a deep commitment to keep every Sabbath holy, but actually just decide, you know, we'll try once a month for 6 months to keep a different Sabbath than what you have done. So that's why, you know, you can start Sabbath on a Friday night at dusk and end it at Saturday night at dusk. You can start Saturday night at dusk and move to Sunday, but let yourself have a time frame where you literally have marked, this is the beginning of Sabbath, this is the end of Sabbath. And then you make decisions about what you will choose not to do, which is, again, not the essence of Sabbath, but it's a way of keeping it holy. Like, will you look on cell phones? Will you get online and check out Facebook? Will you spend time doing emails? What will you say no to with regard to this 24-hour period of time? And once you've been able to say, look, I can't not look at email. I'm addicted. I would be miserable. Well, at least limit yourself to certain things that you choose to only do for like a 5-minute, 10-minute period of time. And eventually what you're going to find is that it's a great relief to have a whole day where you unplug, unless the plugging in is the exploration of the world that Jesus has invited you to explore. My wife and I have studied a lot of astronomy because it's just a fascinating world to find out, you know, that there are 400 billion suns and worlds like ours. That's just beyond incredible. Well, you wouldn't find that out unless you did research, unless you studied. Then, do you see, it's not a fast, never you use a computer on the Sabbath. It becomes, you're not going to dilly and dally and distort time by just spending an hour unpurposefully messing around on the internet. So once you've begun to limit, then you come to this final category of what brings your heart delight? What would bring your spouse's heart delight? How could you spend that time together or as a family creating goodness for one another and yourself? So that really does require experimentation, failure, and therefore revision and trying again. No one does the Sabbath well, but we can grow in our ability to use it as God desires.
One of the things we love to do as a family is go out on the boat, and we have a lot of lakes here. We don't have a beautiful Puget Sound, but we have a lot of lakes, and I love that time because we all leave our cell phones at home, and then you can't get to your cell phone. You can't check your email, and it is in that time that all of a sudden we can recognize, oh, there's clouds in the sky. Oh, look at how pretty this shoreline is. Watch that family, you know, fall off a tube. I mean, it's a very different experience than when one or more people in your family or in your group have access to some sort of media device where they are distracted from what you would otherwise see by simply not looking at something.
Oh, brilliant. It's just brilliant what you're saying. The idea that you're going out into the world that God created. You're utilizing something man created, and that is a boat. And then you're choosing to limit what access you have to the world. And then you're open to the world around you showing its beauty. God showing you his beauty through the world that he's created. That sings Sabbath to me. Now, I'd also be curious as to, what do you know about your lake? And if it's one or two lakes that you end up going to, what do you know about the lake? What do you know about the land around the lake, the history of this lake? What do you know about the aquatic life, the insect life? What do you know in terms of how this lake is different than any other lake? So one of the great gifts of Sabbath is letting your heart begin to explore things that are not relevant to your day-to-day management, making life work. So this is not a day to study Algebra 1. You can do that 6 other days. But there is a world around you that is so amazing if you begin to go below the surface to begin to explore, what does this world hold of God's glory that I'm intended by God to come name and attend to, that is, receive, and then bring back to him praise and glory and honor for the marvel of the world that he has not only created, but is in the process of restoring.
Talking to Dr. Dan Allender today about Sabbath, what it means, how we can observe it. It may not be exactly what you thought it was, and maybe there's not necessarily a right or wrong way to do it, but maybe there's a different way to look at what it actually is. We're going to talk more about Sabbath when we come back. We're going to take our last break. We'll be right back with Dr. Dan Allender. Back to Connecting Faith. Thank you so much for joining us today. Well, we are talking about Sabbath, what it means to observe a 24-hour period. Dr. Dan Allender joins me today. And Dan, it doesn't need to necessarily be 24 hours, does it?
Again, I think the way it was intended, it was a period of time that's consecrated. set apart, and the natural frame, given that the metaphor of creation comes in 7 days, it's meant to be a period of time. But you get to determine that period of time. You know, if you said, I Sabbath for an hour, what I'd say is, really? I mean, that's just, you're just barely beginning. So I would say it's wise to have such a large chunk of time that you don't have a sense of having to rush to indeed enjoy that day. Sunday, Saturday, Sunday. It's our preference when I'm in town to do Saturday night to Sunday night. It just creates a framework where our Saturday evening is not spent in just, again, entertainment dissipation, but also by ending Sunday around dusk, it does allow me to begin to prepare, to pray for, to anticipate. If there's writing or thinking I need to do for what holds on Monday, then I'm not using my Sabbath for the preparation of the new week, but I've actually begun it after my Sabbath has ended.
Well, it's so freeing to your mind to, if a thought crosses your mind, say at, you know, noon on a Sunday, then you can say, no, I'm not going to think or indulge in that calendar issue until dusk tonight. And to give your mind that freedom to enjoy the situation that you're in right then.
Yeah, rules are not meant to constrain you. They're meant actually to free you. And so it isn't a legalistic 24 hours for us. We've certainly had events happen on a Saturday night where we would say, you know, we can allow this to be part of our celebration of Sabbath. But normally we'd prefer to do what we're doing on Saturday night on Friday night. But it's not happening on Friday night. It's happening on Saturday, you know, a graduation or friends are in town, invite us to a meal. We'd rather allow Sabbath to be in our home or in another person's home rather than just travel or get involved in traffic. And so you're constantly working toward this end. Will it bring me joy? Will it bring those I'm with joy? Will it bring God joy? And with joy as one of those categories, my wife at one point said to me, does your closet, we share a closet, but does your portion of the closet bring you joy? And I just looked at her and I went, Becky, I have no clue what you're talking about. She said, have you ever looked at the clothing you've not worn for 2 to 3 years and wondered why you keep them hanging there? It was like, no. She said, what if we begin on a Sabbath going around the house and asking the question, do these books bring you joy? Does this painting bring you joy? Does the way your office is configured bring you joy? And she said, let's explore our world for joy. And we spent a whole Sabbath basically not doing the work, like I'm going to get books out of the case that I don't want, but just sort of asking that question, does it bring us joy? When you start using the criteria of Sabbath for how you look at the rest of your life, that's where I want this to be heard so well. It's not you need a break to then get busy the rest of the week. You need a taste of heaven to know how to live the other 6 days of the week.
Do you find that when people start doing this, that there is opposition from others who maybe don't understand it or don't want to understand it?
Try a diet. The moment you diet, everyone in the world will be baking goods for you. anytime you do anything that really is lovely, you will find more opposition spiritually and also, shall we just say, humanly. That's one of the important categories that I address in the book, and that is spiritual opposition. I mean, you will find chaos beginning to happen when you set time. You'll find people who are going, why can't you come over? Well, because we're Shabbatting tonight. What do you do? What do you mean? Sabbath. Well, can't you come over and Sabbath with us? We could, but do you Sabbath? No. Well, that's kind of strange, inviting us over to your home to Sabbath when you don't Sabbath. Why don't you come to our house and Sabbath with us a couple weeks and see whether you enjoy it. That opposition, you should anticipate, and part of the work of knowing how to Shabbat is knowing how to not answer the phone, not check your email, not letting yourself be vulnerable to the kinds of castigations that come. Like, what are you doing? This is so weird. Only you would think of doing this. This is just bizarre. You're just not normal. I think you're going to find spouses who don't want a Sabbath. Your children are not wanting a Sabbath. I mean, it has to be so enjoyable that the person, in one sense, longs for that moment to go, you know, we've only got 4 or 5 more days before Sabbath comes. I can wait because I am so excited about what we're going to do this Sabbath.
Well, along that same line, are there some ways that we can kind of protect that time? Are there practices you can implement that will protect that time that you've planned? Because I don't know what your home is like during the week, but it seems like things you may make time to do something, whatever it may be, and that time gets filled up very quickly. What can we do to make sure that we are protecting that time?
It's the word holy. And that comes in Exodus 20. It comes in Exodus 3, where you've got the Ten Commandments. The bottom line is always this. You keep something holy by setting it apart. So you need to set apart your calendar. You should be talking about what you as a family want to do on Sabbath days before, preferably 3 or 4 days before, to begin just selecting, you know, what would be meaningful for you, for us to be together on Sabbath. So that conversation, preparing food beforehand, and sometimes our Sabbaths have not been eating already prepared food. Sabbath has actually been cooking brand new meals that none of us have ever done before. So, again, you can see the diversity, the playfulness, but the intentionality has to be there. This time will not be given away easily to anyone for any reason, unless it truly is a 911 type of emergency.
I think that I'd love to close with just you telling what is it that we can expect to gain by giving this time to the Lord?
Well, first and foremost, even though it may be repetitive, Joe, to say this, I think you're going to see his favor and his delight. I think you'll have a taste of, again, the presence of God as one who made this world for you to enjoy his glory. So I think what you're going to find is that your heart has more joy. It anticipates more like a child, the things that a child was meant to look forward to, their birthday, Christmas, those events where we are in the splendid presence of the gifting of others. So you will have more joy. You will certainly have a greater sense of rest and restoration. But I think as we end, what I would say is you're just going to have a sense that you know the heart of God better than you did if you simply just gave your day over to go to church, come home, make a meal, take a nap, read a book, watch TV, and then interact with a friend on the phone, prepare another meal, then to watch more TV, and then go to bed. That's not the Sabbath, and no wonder in some ways we end up going into Monday with a certain level of exhaustion that we're not meant to have.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Allender, we just thank you so much just for sharing your thoughts on Sabbath, what it means, what it is, the benefits that we will receive if we dedicate that time to God. It's just been an enriching time, and I just pray for not only this book, but obviously you have lots of other books as well, and I'm reading here that Healing the Wounded Heart is going to be coming up next. Do you want to tell us what that's all about and when it should be coming out?
Yeah, it should be coming out March of 2016, but the book I'm probably best known for is the book The Wounded Heart. And what I did was to look at what I've learned, what we've learned about sexual abuse in the last 25 years. So it's a brand new book. It's not a revision of The Wounded Heart, but a brand new book trying to address where are we in our culture as we address the truly satanic harm of sexual abuse.
Well, Dan, thanks so much, and we will have information about that book and about your other books on our author page on Faith Radio. And if you want to learn more about that, you can go right to our website at myfaithradio.com. Dan, thanks so much for joining us.
Joe, thank you, and let me just say that even though it's not the Sabbath, it has been a Sabbath conversation with you.
Well, thank you very much. Wonderful to have you. Thanks, and have a great day, and thank you for listening to Connecting Faith.